Welcome to the Black Heels and Tractor Wheels podcast, where we are sharing stories from a range of women from around New Zealand.
For nearly a century, Rural Women New Zealand has been dedicated to strengthening and supporting women and children to become empowered members of their communities.
We hope that by hearing these stories from inspiring women all around the country, you'll feel inspired yourself.
We're your hosts, Emma Higgins and Claire Williamson, and would love for you to join and subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our rural stories.
So tell us a little bit about how you started out. Have you always been involved in rural life?
Well, the short answer is no. So no, I was I married into farming, really, as how it evolved. But grew up in Masterton in the Wairarapa, and that's very much a provincial service town, and revolves around a lot what's going on agriculturally around the region. And of course, had the cousins that were on farms and got to experience, going out there and doing lambing beats, and even an old boyfriend who was dairy farming in university holidays. So I'd go up there and sort of help in the shed. So it was nice to get a little bit of practical experience under my townie kind of boots.
And so how did you end up to where you are now on your farm? Tell us a little bit about how you met your man and ended up going into this full time.
We're both Wairarapa people, and I'd gone down to Otago University and studied first geography and then master's in resource management. And he'd gone off to Massey and done a Bachelor of Agriculture. He'd then travelled, I'd worked in Wellington, and then we both ended up sort of circling back to the Wairarapa, and we're introduced by a mutual friend, really. So that's kind of what happened. And I guess for me, my background in geography and resource management was because I'd always had a real interest in our interaction on the land, particularly that's whole resource allocation space. How do we look after our people, sustain them, but also minimize or mitigate the impacts we have on the environment. So now, we see that at the coalface with farming all the time, no more than at the moment with some of our resource allocation and emissions conversations. And so it was, for me, it was quite fortuitous, I guess. The career was more in local authorities, writing policy about practices on the land. I didn't seek to find a farmer just to progress my career. But it worked out pretty well. And so, one of the upsides is, we've been able to do a whole lot of stuff on our farm, which has been amazing. And then sort of continue to progress my interest in resource management and a bit of the politics as well.
And I understand, like, it feels to me like you're quite the go-getter, and you've obviously been involved with quite a few different working groups and federated farmers and whatnot. So could you maybe tell us a little bit about how your on-farm role and how that kind of business space for you then evolved into leadership and governance and kind of what that looked like for you? Because a lot of our listeners are younger and looking to progress in their careers, and they find people's stories really useful.
Yeah, and it's always lovely to share your story and give others an alternative pathway. We don't come at it the same way, that's for sure. Yeah, as I said, I married a farmer, and then we were very much driven by producing good, sustainable food and fibre with a reducing environmental footprint, whilst also having a good time and enjoying what we do. And I think often a lot of us on the land forget that part of it in the busyness of getting everything done. Once we separated out a wider farming partnership, and it was just my husband Mick and I farming, we decided to enter the Balanced Farm Environment Awards. And that was really exciting because we'd been embarking on our fencing and planting and so no tillage kind of operation for a number of years, and we really wanted to get more feedback about what might be next in an environmental space, but also in a business development space as well. And I'm also a strong believer in that we need to stand up and show our farming businesses so that more and more people, particularly our town people and our consumers, understand what it is we do and the challenges that go alongside that. So we entered and we were fortunate to win the Wellington Region Balanced Farm Environmental Supreme Award in 2013, and then got to go along to National Showcase and meet lots of other like-minded people, which was a really nice place to be. And at that, through that event, I met the lovely Charmaine O'Shea, who it was also our year of Farm Environment Awards, but with her brother Shane in the Northland region. And they told me about this escalator program through Agri Women's Development Trust. And I was like, that sounds really interesting. So with her encouragement, I applied for that. And I was fortunate, I guess, one, to get in, but two, to have a CV of things I'd been involved in the Wairarapa regional plan development, district plan submissions. You were looking at local rates and all of those sorts of things. So the amazing woman that you meet and the networks you build are absolutely critical, but also working the uncomfortable stuff, so working on yourself. I much preferred the sort of governance module where it was all very black and white and quite academic. But then when you've got to look at your own strengths and weaknesses, the things that hold you back, the things that bring you to life, it's a whole lot harder work, but well worth the investment in doing that. And so I did that in 2015. And then in 2016, in the very start of the year, pea weevil was discovered in a seed processing store in the Wairarapa. And that became my, first major role in governance as I got appointed on MPI's governance group to sort of manage that response. Yeah, so from there, that evolved into something, I hadn't even heard of a pea weevil. And then, next day kind of occupied actually for the next 4 or 5 years on that response. But certainly in that first 18 months, 2 years, it was pretty intense. Went from nothing to media, the only farmer on that governance group. And that was enormous. And that was it was challenging because the technical advice we got was that, we got a shot at eradication. And that meant putting a regional growing ban on our own farm of growing. We grew about 40 hectares of seed peas. Of doing it, the growing ban impacting neighbours, relatives, colleagues, friends, and the whole Wairarapa community who could no longer grow peas for, in the first instance 2 years, but it ended up being a 4-year growing ban. So, it certainly tapped into my my governance training pretty early on as we sort of sought to keep our eye on the prize and focus on that eradication. And it was with a lot of satisfaction that 4 years later, we were able to claim eradicate pea weevil. So from that role, I got, a bit more exposure into federated farmers at a national level, where I had been connected sort of loosely at a local level with regional plan work and kind of had the arable industry hat on and I was representing arable farmers. So fortunate to meet the arable industry group chairperson, who was Guy Wigley, from the South Island at that stage. And Guy, an old-fashioned gentleman, I would describe him, with a couple of daughters, and he championed me. He advocated for me to step up onto that arable council, and then he pushed me through to put my hand up to stand to be the national arable chair. And I will be forever grateful to Guy for giving me that opportunity. And that is so valuable for any of our young people coming through, is that someone sees them, someone gives them an opportunity, and they may even give them a bit of a push to back themselves and have a crack. So that's my sort of probably slightly unconventional way into feds, because I didn't spend years on local committees and sort of do lots and lots of time. I came at it quite rapidly.
But like you say, it's nice hearing how other people have traversed their journey, and it's nice to hear the different ways and elements that they've gone about it. And I think that's really useful to hear for many of our listeners. I want to pick up on, and we're going to flesh out on a number of topics from here, but one of the first things I want to ask you about And this is not meant to be a loaded question. This is genuinely a curiosity. You mentioned that you were one of the first, on one of your committees that you sat on with MPI, you were one of the only farming voices there. And I'm wondering, across your journey at the beginning of PeaWeevil right through to more recently, is this still the case, or do you think there is a broader range of voices sitting around government tables now?
Look, no committee's the same, but I believe it is still an issue. I was the only one, you know, that had skin in the game, if you like, making these decisions. Everyone else was based in Wellington. Actually, I think they were all based in Wellington, but, you know, they'd never represented what the social and economic impact looked like for our community. They just took it from a very narrow focus about how we will eradicate. And look, honestly, I believe if I hadn't been out on there, or someone with the same background as me and ambition to make sure our community got looked after, I don't believe we would have got eradication. And I don't believe we would have come through with some of the other bits that were part of that. I was also appointed to the He Waka Ikanoa Steering Group from my position at Federated Farmers. And there again, still the only farmer in the room. A couple of others with some farm properties, but, you know, not principally deriving their income off the farm, which obviously, you know, again, has a really distinctly different impact when you view things and what farms and farmers and growers are capable of sustaining. And I think that is still an issue going forward. I think we put too many industry people on these collaborative groups, but without the wealth of knowledge on what it looks like on the farm. And you know, and I understand it's hard to tap into farmers' time, but I believe we actually need to be remunerating those farmers for those expertise. And I spoke at a beef and lamb forum, staff forum this week, and I said exactly that. And that's not to bankrupt our levy bodies or government or whoever. It's just to say these farmers have expertise and skill sets, and, you know, that are as professional as anyone else's in the room. And you need to recognize, one, their time away from the farm, and that they're probably either work isn't getting done, or they're having to sort of get someone to sit in behind and do what that might be, milking cows, shifting breaks, planting crops. The travel costs, the expense of coming down there, you know, through the PeaWeevil incursion, I would drive myself to these meetings, pay my own fuel, you know, buy my own coffee, you know, and that's simply not good enough when you've got farming people prepared to put their hand up for what are really uncomfortable positions at times. You know, you've really got industry and government have got to get in behind and support them.
Hear, hear. I think that's wonderfully said. And I think now, particularly with, well, I mean, you mentioned it yourself with He Waka Ikanoa, and it is a very challenging position that some of our leaders have put themselves in. And I think that's absolutely correct. They bring wonderful expertise to roles that are vitally important to the future of farming. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your time at Feds. So you've just resigned and you've got life outside of Feds. Reflecting on your time within Feds, tell us a little bit about perhaps two things: your most proudest moment and also your most challenging moment as well.
So I had 2 years at Feds as the National Arable Chairperson. There came an opportunity to stand for the National Vice President 2 years ago. And I thought really hard about that. I had one year still of my term as Arable Chair, but I also had a lot of really good people around me in the Arable Executive that I knew could step into that role. So I decided with a view that I wanted to be more than arable. I wanted to be across all of the primary industries and that interaction we have and the need to represent all of our rural communities, irrespective of what sector you belong to. Desire to have, you know, a woman alongside Andrew in, you know, that sort of top president, vice president role, just to sort of balance it out with the different way we think about things and approach things. And so those were the two key reasons that I put my hand up and stood on that election. And I was fortunate to be elected. It's been a hell of a ride the last 4 years, I must say. Like, I suppose the highlight is the people you meet, and it's generally people like yourself that are driven for good outcomes for anyone really, but let's say, I guess we focus on our rural communities and our farmers and growers, and that network that I have now around the country and actually in parts around the world. In my first couple of months of being arable chair, I got an opportunity to go and speak on behalf of the World Farmers Organization at the World Seed Partnership in Myanmar, up in Asia. And that, I mean, that would actually have to be the most amazing experience. Saying yes to that, I got our wills redone because I was a bit nervous about going there because there was that Rohingya issues at the time, sort of an ethnic cleansing, its military rule. I wasn't sure what the state of the airlines were like. And all of that was sort of playing through. But so my husband Mick came as well. Obviously, we paid for him. And we spent 3 weeks up there, and it was the most amazing experience because it's a beautiful country. The architecture is amazing. The culture, the food, and most importantly, the beautiful people there that are there. And it saddens me now to see, you know, quite often you'll get a media report about what's going on and that military control of people. They, you know, they have a very challenging life, and they certainly can't protest like we can protest in New Zealand without getting arrested and imprisoned. So that was also a real highlight. I guess in terms of lowlights, I think the work-life balance just got so out of whack, and the enormity of the roles on the Federated Farmers Board continue to grow and grow as we get more issues, more complexity of those issues, less boundaries around your own time, social media cutting into your life at any time, constant sort of criticism, and the media expecting you to be readily accessible all of the time and be ready to go and delivering really good statements and be informed. And, you know, you can only be across so many issues to a certain depth. And so for me, the balance probably got out of whack. Well, I guess I was getting feedback at home that I wasn't particularly present, you know, and the farm is busy, and the farm is what pays the bills. And I've got 3 teenage children that I very much want to spend time with them. And, you know, I like to see my husband occasionally as well. So, yeah, I made a very tough decision for me was to exit Feds after 4 years on the board, take some time just to refresh and recharge, and then kind of go into the next role, which is I've taken on a role as Rural Propositions Manager with FMG. Yeah, so that's, and look, there's a few reasons in that, but certainly what FMG does for our rural communities really meets my why and meets my values.
I love how connected you are into the rural community space. That's something that is obviously quite big for us at Rural Women New Zealand. And it's really nice to hear someone at such a high level continually put that into what they say. So thank you for that. Speaking of women, a couple of curiosities have come up for me and what you just said around the role of women coming into these governance roles in these bigger organizations. And you said you were, you know, you wanted to see someone, you wanted to see a woman in that role that you took at Feds. What do you think needs to happen within these organizations for us to encourage more women to step forward, for us to train and build up that confidence for women and just see, I suppose, I don't want to say equality or diversity really, because I think that's a bit token, but to see more women sitting around the board table at that level and adding their voice?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I concur with the diversity or quality thing. And there's nothing where you both, it used to really annoy Katie Milne and I when it would be assumed that you're there as the token woman. And that is so demeaning. And there are so many capable women that are there because of their own skill sets and capabilities. Yeah, I think it starts at the grassroots, and we need to look at what are the barriers for women to be coming through, in this case, Federated Farmers. because it's there's no direct reason why. You know, you can be on there and be a woman. I just think some of the barriers include us juggling often up off-farm careers, but, you know, or on-farm careers, and then often we're the primary caregiver as well. Sometimes those meetings are at a really dreadful time with kids and dinners and getting kids off to bed, or the juggle of after school pickup or getting kids to school. I think there's a whole piece of work there we could do to look at how we can encourage and support our women to come through more. And we need to start in the provinces, as I said, at the grassroots. So what are we, you know, what are we doing to get those, you know, a better balance, I suppose, around those provincial executives, and then sponsoring or mentoring them to come through to that next level. And look, I'm happy to put my hand up for that. I talk to a lot of young women, encourage them as much as I can to believe in themselves, to feel they're on equal footing in those forums as well. And I think that's something we also often overlook. And they say this is, you know, this is well documented in interviews where men will not focus on the skills they don't have. They'll just embellish the ones they do. Whereas women, this is job interviews or applying for jobs, women will kind of focus on all those things that they can't do and think, oh, I shouldn't really. So we need to work really hard on turning that around. And, you know, a shout out to Agri Women's Development Trust. I'm so passionate about that, and that they have recognised that women need a bit of assistance in that space, particularly if they've stepped out to have kids, and then building their confidence to come back and to interact in a professional world can be quite daunting. So, but also, you know, rural leaders, Kellogg's, Nuffield's, Young Farmers Club, all of those working together to kind of really build that resource up to feed through.
Yeah, no, totally agree. I am speaking of confidence and speaking of, I suppose, challenge that we sort of talked a little bit about before. I'm always interested with people that I respect and admire as to how they deal with challenge. What are their hacks? How do you get back up when you've had a really difficult media interview where someone is just smashing you with such difficult questions? How do you get back up and believe in your vision and what you're trying to achieve and stick with it?
Yeah, good question. And, you know, some days it works better than others. For me, probably exercise is really good. Just blow it out, either a good hard walk up some hills or go for a run. The other thing is to surround yourself with networks. And I have, you know, have purposefully done that over the years. And I've got a really amazing women's network that that I utilize several times a day, where we share ideas and thoughts, and we can vent about a crap day, a crap media interview, someone tearing you down on social media, any of those things. And I think that really helps, because we're our own harshest critics. And if you kind of get that perspective back from using your support networks, you can refocus and get back to looking at your values and your purpose and keep plodding on.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think that support of doing it together in a group and just being able to be really honest with those other people as well, I find that really helpful, helpful too. I'm really interested, as someone who has probably perhaps been able to step back a wee bit after finishing up your role at Feds, obviously taking a role with another industry-leading organisation, and your passion for rural communities and farming. What is your vision for the direction that, I suppose, farming and the rural community in New Zealand needs to go? And how do we, as rural people of today, kind of make that a really positive experience heading forward? Because I know there's been just so many negative kind of rhetoric in the media and even within our industry itself. And you strike me as such a positive person. I feel like you'll have a great perspective on this.
Yeah, well, thanks for the confidence, Kia. I guess I'll start with a negative, and that is it breaks my heart to see the way rural communities are being torn up at the moment, and they're, you know, anyone who sort of tries to lead can be shot down. We need to club together, and I don't just mean people on the farm. I mean Team Ag. I really want Team Ag to band together as a group. We're quite small if you look at us, you know, as a population. But when you bring in all of the support industries, all of the downstream and upstream parts of the service industry, we're actually a significant player in this whole food and fibre production sector. And you know, who doesn't like their food? And you know, so I think working together, we need to be realistic about the environmental challenges that are coming at us, though, and that there is, and with climate change, we can't hide from that. If we bury our head in the sand, that's not going to take us anywhere either. You know, the government the previous government signed us up to the Paris Agreement. You know, that has not changed. We have obligations to try and drive, to drive down our emissions. And we must seek to do that. And we must seek to do that in a way that doesn't decimate our industry and our rural communities. So we must invest heavily in research and development and innovation. We must equip people with the skills to look at that stuff, how we can continue to produce sustainable food and fibre in a way with a decreasing environmental footprint, and enables people to still have good social outcomes. You know, their well-being and their needs are being met, and nothing in that is easy. But what we will not be successful if we start putting up barriers, criticizing each other, hating each other, you know, taking pot shots at the government or any other interest group. We actually have to work together, and the sooner we get over ourselves and work that out, the sooner we will start to land some of these things and hopefully put them behind us, because I know I wouldn't like to be on Te Waka Ikanoa for the next 10, 15 years, and I'm pretty sure those people that are still there and the others that have been heavily involved won't either. You know, we've got other stuff to do.
Yeah, and I think one thing that keeps coming up in my mind about all of that, and I suppose regulation as a whole, yep, we've got to have regulation, we've got to make sure that people are doing the right thing, and sorry, this is a wee bit off topic, but I am interested in your views. My general opinion on most things is that it's better to create a carrot than it is to beat a stick, and I wonder why we don't have more carrots in this regulatory space, you know, that instead of having to adhere to a certain amount of guidelines, that if you hit these excessive great targets, we will reward you in some way. And I'm interested, do you know of any discussions that have been had in that kind of space?
Yeah, look, we don't focus enough on that. That's my gut feel. And I also think government can get myopic about the poor performers. And other critics, such as the media and some of our green groups, extreme green groups, and they get fixated on those people that aren't performing up to scratch, and then their response relates to that. Equally, though, the agri industry needs to recognise those that aren't up to scratch. And yes, we need to support them in that change, but we can't ignore that either. And I think we've been really good at just burying our head in the sand and kind of seeing the neighbour doing a shocking performance with their animals or whatever it might be, and kind of going, oh, it's not my problem. It actually is our problem, because we all get taken down with that. So, you know, there's some takeouts from that, from my comments, I guess, for us as an industry and also for the government. Look, MPI, they have a number of funds we could tap into, and they are pretty, this I perhaps shouldn't call it this, but they almost seem, you know, pretty desperate to give it away, provided you meet the right criteria, you know, around innovation, decreasing environmental footprint, all of those things. There's a lot of support out there, I think we need to be more orchestrated in the way that we tap into that. I think we need to have our levy bodies really supporting us in pursuing those objectives and helping the alternatives. We need to have an open and creative mindset about what might be. And there is nothing more certain than change. So we know we will need to do things differently.
You've had a lot of changes in the last 12 months and have been able to take a step back, have a bit of a break, spend some time with your beautiful family. And you've now got a role that sounds like it's going to be a great, fulfilling challenge for you, which is great. What are you hoping to achieve over the next 12 months in your life and your work? I can see that you're quite a relatively ambitious person and you're probably always looking ahead to achievement. So what might that look like for Karen Williams?
Yeah, and as I said earlier, you know, taking a step back from feds was hard because I was very passionate about the work I was doing. And, you know, and being the only woman on the board, you know, I was passionate about issues that no one else was going to champion. And that was lights of the seatbelts on school buses and helping Philippa Cameron champion her petition. I also drew to attention, you know, that there's a lack of toilet facilities for a lot of people that visit our farms, our shearers, you know, some of our contractors and things. And, you know, that's just not good enough these day and age, you know, particularly for young, for any woman coming on farm that they don't have proper ablutions to use. So, yeah, so anyway, those kind of issues, and I hope they don't lose sight of those at feds. But yeah, it was time for me to take a breather. FMG, I guess I was, as I said earlier, I was attracted to them because of what they were achieving in our rural communities. And look, the insurance part is key. You know, we need to protect ourselves, particularly now as we see even more severe weather events through climate change. And we must not lose sight of that link between, you know, reducing our emissions to reduce the impacts of climate change on our farms, because we can't sort of have our hand out to government in the next flood, drought, hailstorm, but then on the other hand say, look, we're not committed to reducing our emissions. So, you know, we've got to be across both of those things. So insurance obviously plays a really important role in helping people when things do go pear-shaped on their properties. We also at FMG play a big role in advice as well. So informing people how to mitigate their risk, how to do things like lights of the stop and pop campaign that we have, with looking under the hood of your tractor before you start it up, and a bird's nest or starling nest has creates a fire. So yeah, there's lots of that kind of, but then there's also being a mutual, you know, we recycle the funds back into community initiatives, and that was the big attraction for me. So we, you know, we support Farm Strong, we support Young Farmers New Zealand, we support Melanoma New Zealand, the Agri Women's Development Trust, you know, all of these initiatives which are actively looking to improve people's lot in rural communities. So that's why I'm there, and that's where I hope to continue to add value, but also bring with me my networks throughout the country that we can tap into. And I get very excited. I guess I'm a collaborator and a networker, but when I think, oh, they should meet them. So that's kind of my why. So yeah, that's me for a little while. I have other aspirations, but at the moment I'm happy to sort of sit tight, give my best to FMG, be more present for my kids as they sort of head into their later teenage years, and also, you know, help Mick keep going on the farm and our worker Daniel, he's a very important part of our business, so that we are, you know, we're doing okay on the farm as well.
And I suppose also a little bit of an element of practicing what you preach, you know, you're such a, like, your farm's incredible. Obviously it's doing very well. You've won multiple awards and have such a great attitude to the environmental space as well. I just wanted to say thank you, not only for joining us today, Husky Clear over here, but also for what you do and your unique lens that you see rural communities and the ag industry. I think it's really clear that you have a slightly different vision to others, and that's important that voice has been there for so long at the table. And I think having that experience now with government departments and advocacy work will just set you in such great stead for achieving a lot in the future. So we do look forward to seeing what the future holds for you. But once again, thank you for your wonderful smile, positivity and fantastic contribution to the rural sector.
Yeah, thank you, Claire and Emma. And look, thank you to you both too for championing rural voices and, you know, and telling the stories that are happening. You know, our success as an industry, we need to build that bridge with our consumers and make them appreciate just how much passion goes into producing, particularly their food, and why we do it, and all the balls we've got in the air while we do it, but ultimately our love for it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Rural Women New Zealand is a community of like-minded women who are doing amazing things in their respective regions and communities.
This podcast celebrates the achievements, successes, and stories of our rural women, which are also the foundations for our organisation's rich history.
We want you to be part of our future story, so please join us by clicking on the link in the show notes, and we look forward to welcoming you into the fold.